This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. And we've got one of the first guests on the show, ever to be on the show. Mike Griffin is with us. Mike, of course, you've heard him on. I've had him on from Knoxville, Tennessee, from time to time. And he's going to talk some SEC basketball with us. We know up here that the Big Ten is the best. But we'll let him get in a few shots about the SEC. And he's a good friend of Bruce Pearl, and we'll hear from Bruce Pearl shortly, and we'll do some of that. So Mike, why don't you go on and tell us a little bit about Bruce Pearl?
Well, I'll tell you, Bruce is a great guy. You know, he's doing some great things with ESPN right now. He was able to really get the Tennessee basketball program on track when he was hired from Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He did a really nice job with the Panthers and got them into the Sweet 16 by beating Alabama, and I think that got Tennessee's attention back in the day.
Yeah.
And I know near the end of the program, he's going to come on, and we were able to catch up with him, and he's going to come on and tell us what he thinks about the Spartans, because now that he's an analyst, he can see across the board, you know, he can see outside the SEC, and that'll be neat. And I know, gosh, Earl, we're just a few minutes away from a little bit more Tennessee talk and Big Ten talk.
Yeah, Quanzo Martin.
Yes, sir. Quanzo Martin is going to come on. And, you know, I never really, when I covered Tennessee before I came up here and took this job with them live covering Michigan State, I never really talked a lot to Quanzo about when he played against Michigan State. And he doesn't really like to brag on himself, certainly not in the Knoxville market. They won't appreciate what he did at Purdue. But I'd be curious to ask him today about playing for Coach Katie and how Breslin Center and Michigan State looked from that Purdue point of view.
Yeah.
Of course, they always used to be battling at the top.
Yes, they did.
So that'll be interesting to talk with him here in a couple minutes. And I'll tell you, you know, I've been here since, I guess October I took this job. My first assignment was the Michigan State-Michigan football game.
Yep.
What a heartbreaker that was for the Spartans, but as they had trouble closing things out this season. And I know we'll have time to talk about that on our show. And, you know, there's got to be some frustrations from the fans out there. Maybe we'll hear from them. And, you know, Coach D'Antonio, they got that Buffalo Wild Wings victory, so they finished with another winning record.
It can't help but help. And it did. They're very appreciative of that win. Yes, they would have liked to have gotten more wins, of course, than the 6 wins, than the 7th win in the bowl game. You know, they had those back-to-back 11-win seasons, which they've never done before.
6 straight bowls now under Mark D'Antonio.
Yep.
And another winning season. I told somebody, you know, don't scoff at 7-6 because 3 straight winning seasons sounds a lot better than 2 out of the last 4 seasons being losing seasons.
Yep.
And when you're in living rooms, not only are you going to say it, but those cats you're recruiting against, if you'd have had a losing season, you know, why do you want to go? They've had 2 out of 4 losing seasons. They've lost Bell, Golston, Sims. But I think Michigan State's going to be all right. We can look at their schedule a little bit later on, and I think they're an 8 or a 9 win team minimum next year.
Yeah, they've got a lot easier schedule this year, a lot lighter.
So they
should be okay next year. But that's the thing with sports. You never know. I think that's why we cover it and so many other people cover it and follow it, because you just don't know.
Yeah, but people got to listen to you, Earl, and I know they have for years, because you usually have some inclination of what might happen based on what you've seen. And that's why I always liked talking with you all these years, because if I wanted to know what was going on in the Big Ten, all I needed to do was call you. I knew we would argue for 20 minutes about the SEC and the Big Ten, but I would find out real quick when we would go down, okay, who's 1 versus 1, 2 versus 2, and I can't tell you how many times we had those conversations and how much fun it was. And now I'm up here, and I'm kind of getting a feel for it, and I'm saying, you know what, this Big Ten, it's a lot better than I remember it being 20 years ago when I was a student here.
It's a lot better. And, you know, it's funny how we talk about it now, and it's so strong. I mean, when you were here, it wasn't that strong.
No.
But now it's really strong.
This basketball is fabulous. Although I don't know if we can get Konzo to agree with us that the Big Ten's better. I don't even know if he's played a Big Ten team yet, but he has had his hands full this season. He lost one of his best players. I guess I'd be curious to know from him how the Big Ten differs from the SEC from what he's already seen. And I don't know when he's. He should be getting dialed up here pretty quick. I wonder what he'll. That'd be kind of curious.
He's on the line now. That him on the line? Okay, yes. So we've got Konzo Martin. Hey, Konzo. Hi, my name is Earl Robinson. Glad to have you with us. And we got Mike Griffin with us. I know you know Mike. And Mike has a question for you.
Well, Coach, we were just talking about your career at Purdue. And, of course, everyone knows what a great defender you were and a fabulous three-point shooter and playing for Coach Katie in some of those great Purdue years. How much different is the SEC than the Big Ten than when you played? And what have you noticed in these first couple years coaching the Tennessee Vols in the Southeastern Conference?
Well, I mean, I think when you in comparison to SEC and the Big Ten, I think they're both great leagues. I think more than anything, the Big Ten has received a perception from a basketball standpoint. They don't get up and down the court. And I don't think that's the case at all. I think the Big Ten don't get enough credit for having great coaches as well as putting their teams in position, because what happens when you do a tremendous job of scouting teams, that's what happens. So now you're not scoring 80 to 90 points a game because the guys do a great job of scouting personnel, putting themselves in the best situation to win ball games. And I think it's very similar to the SEC. Before I came to the SEC, the perception, you thought SEC, scoring 80, 90 points a game. But now when you look at it in league play, it's down to the 60s because teams do a good job of scouting, defending guys, taking away your best option. Now you got to go to the second, third options to win ball games. So I think they're both very similar. I think, RPI-wise right now, I think the Big Ten is a little bit better from that standpoint.
Hey, Konzo, how good, when you look at the Big Ten, comparing them to the SEC, how good do you think the Big Ten is? We hear a lot about the Big Ten from other parts of the country, but how good do you believe it is?
Well, I think it's a great league, and I don't say it just because I played in the Big Ten, but I just think you look across the board, you consistently get six and seven, sometimes hovering around 8 teams in the NCAA tournament. I think that means you have a good league and you have a league of consistency, winning ball games. But, you also have teams that I guess you would call your bottom teams in the Big Ten. They're very competitive teams. And that's what happens when you have a successful league and they go out and compete in preseason games. And, you have to use your suspects. Michigan State's always hovering around the top. Purdue, you got Wisconsin. Michigan's playing really well. So those teams are always around the top competing for that top slot. And I think when you have that, you have a chance to be special every year.
That's one thing. When you mentioned Michigan, that raised a lot of hairs around here in East Lansing. I know you had some very good games when you played in the Purdue, when you played with Purdue and of course, with Coach Katie. Coach Katie and I had a little game going on. Haven't had a chance to talk to him recently, but him and I were talking about retiring at the same time. Well, he got me by a little bit of time.
He's a good man. He did a great job in that league. But he with Coach Judd, you have some tremendous coaches. Yeah. Lou Henson, you go across the board, guys that really coach the game, have a level of charisma and style to them as well.
No, there's no question. And I tell you, Earl, and Konzo, I don't know if he laughs because he's mad or happy when I tell him this, but I said, I don't care what color Tennessee's wearing. You can put orange and white on him if you want. I'm watching Purdue basketball when I watch the Tennessee Vols. And, last year, Konzo comes into the league. They don't, he came from Missouri State. He won that league out there. I don't know how they didn't get in the NCAA. They had a 42 RPI and somehow got passed over. But so he rolls into the SEC and everybody says, oh, yeah, this is a nice guy, whatever. We're going to pick him 11th. So they pick Konzo on the Vols 11th. And I didn't know how Konzo would react because, he's big and he can look scary when he wants to. He never acts it, but he always looks it. You don't have to get mad at the kids. Yeah. He just looks at him. And he said, well, I guess we're going to find out. And, Earl, they finished second in the SEC last year. And they kind of snuck up on people. But, Coach, this year, there's no sneaking up. They've figured out, I believe, that you've brought a little Big Ten basketball down there. What's it been like from year one to year two as far as what you're seeing from teams? Do you feel like you're scouted a little bit better the second time around? Did we lose Konzo?
I don't think so.
Coach, are you there?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you get to hear my question okay?
Yes, okay. I heard. I think what happens the second time around, teams are familiar with you, which is everybody in the league. I think for us, the next phase, obviously you're losing one of your key guys in Jerron Maimon, who's redshirting this season. Mm-hmm. But for us, it's just a maturity of a program, finding ways to win games, getting key stops. We had a tough loss last night at Ole Miss. You're right there hovering around the two-minute mark. Now it's a matter of us getting over that mental hump and winning the games.
And it's hard to do without your best rebounder. And when you're trying to play that style of ball, and, of course, the whistles are blowing and the home cooking's going and the Ole Miss is in the top 25. It's amazing how those top 25 teams seem to get those calls at home. Let me get you to reflect back a little bit, though, Konzo. When we were in Knoxville and I would have you on radio there, I would interview you for the newspaper, there wasn't a whole lot of opportunities for you to really talk about Purdue, and you're not a guy that brags on yourself, but now you're on an East Lansing radio station with the Michigan State Market.
He can brag on himself.
It is the right time to talk about what it was like when you played in the Big Ten, and I guess I wondered if you had any memories of playing in the Breslin Center, and how did Michigan State look from the Purdue point of view when you played them?
You know, really, really, both teams were very similar, in my opinion. They both teams play hard. They execute offensively. Physical teams are great coaches, and at that time, Jud Heathcote was the head coach, and Tom Izzo was one of his assistants who did a great job recruiting a lot of those players. But very similar. I remember my days, going up against Sean Respert every year. Was a very talented guy. Eric Snow was their point guard, who didn't score a lot, but was a great defender, physical guy, tremendous leader. DJ Stevens was a power four for those guys, a physical presence. So they had all the parts to be successful, and they had success every year. But it was never easy. It was always, fighting those guys in the Breslin Center. Great atmospheres. Just things that you remember. Winning, losing games, you enjoy the atmosphere and competing at that level.
How did you used to go? What was the feeling? And I know you were recruited by many schools. I know you almost went to Illinois, but that your mother thought that Purdue would be a better place for you. Coach Katie, of course, being the kind of mentor that he is. But what was it like for Purdue with Indiana? What was that relationship or that rivalry like? We're familiar with Michigan State and Michigan up here, but was it an intense? Was it a dislike? Was it a respect? What was it like for Purdue to play Indiana?
Well, I think that was a good hate, from the standpoint you're competing against an opponent. I never saw their guys in the summertime and spring. The only time I saw their guys when we played against them was just one of those deals. I stayed in West Lafayette, Indiana. I didn't go to Indianapolis. I stayed in my area, and those guys did the same. But it was very competitive because not only did you compete on the floor against the talent that they had, it was also Gene Katie and Bob Knight. So that intertwining, that circle right there, those two competitive guys, those two guys run the state, so to speak. They're battling the state somewhat divided, but I shouldn't say divided, probably 30-70 Indiana. It was just one of those deals. We had a chip on our shoulder when we played against those guys, but tremendous rivalry.
Yes, that's the thing. It was such a tremendous rivalry between the two teams. We just never really felt, at the time, we really didn't feel it was how strong. We knew it was a strong rivalry. We knew it was a very good game between the two. But we didn't look at it as like hating Michigan, like way Michigan hates Michigan State, right, and vice versa. But we didn't look at it that way. But we always felt a very strong rivalry against Purdue.
Well, and I'll tell you why. Because just like Konzo, and where he learned this from, was probably Gene Katie. Purdue has always been a first-class program. Yeah. They never get mixed up in a whole lot of riffraff. You never really hear their guys popping off at the mouth. I know that Konzo's guys don't do that. In fact, I was watching their game with Ole Miss last night, and there were a couple of occasions when I was surprised his players didn't come unglued with the calls. But they know better under Konzo's direction than to challenge officials. And here's a question for you, Coach. Now that it's year two, do you build a different kind of relationship with the officials? Do they start to know your looks? And when Konzo's not real happy with a call, and when do you cross that line? Because I don't think you've had a technical yet at Tennessee, have you?
No, I haven't. But it's, last night, like I told my staff when I walked away from that game, and I always say this first, I think that the officials do a tremendous job of trying to officiate games and do the best job possible. I never feel like they're going to a game leaning one way or the other. But I just felt last night was tough on our big kid, Jarnell Stokes. I made some tough calls. I've always, under Gene Katie, I always know going into a road, he always say you're down 10, you're down 15 after the case. You assume that going in. So just was one of those deals that was so tough that when I come back in the morning and watch film of the game, the live TV version, because I rarely watch the TV version, I just thought three of those calls on Jordan Stokes were tough, tough calls. And I told my staff I probably should have got kicked out of that game last night when I watched it, when I watched it on TV. I just felt like it was unfair for our big guy, really, because he works so hard. And just because he's so physical, mm-hmm. it's hard to move him. A foul is still a foul.
Yeah, it is. Hey, Kwanza, I want to thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure. Pleasure talking with you, reminiscing a little bit about Purdue and Michigan State. We know they had some great games. I can tell you how one time when you were probably – it wasn't a good memory for you, but when Michigan State won the championship there, I had to jump over the counter that where we all sat at just so I could get to the locker room first.
Because of all the fans on the floor?
Because all the fans were on the floor.
Yep. Was that the championship in the Breslin? Like, I think that was in 1990.
Yep, that was the one.
Good thing I wasn't at Purdue at that time. So,
Browns was confident they wouldn't have lost if he was on the team.
I think that was a tough call. I think Steve Smith might have. Mm-hmm. I think he might have fouled somebody. Some of the ref didn't call. I remember that game as I watched it on TV.
You were in St. Louis watching the Big Ten that early?
Oh, yeah, I remember watching that guy. I think it was the ESPN game, if I'm not mistaken. I remember watching the game, though.
Wow. Yep. Going back, and you know, the Big Ten was lucky to have Konzo, and I'll tell you what, Earl, he ain't going to say nothing. He'll just smile. I wouldn't be surprised if the Big Ten has Konzo again someday. We'll see. I know he's got a job to do down there. He's going to lead Tennessee back. He's missing his big guy. Let me tell you, next year, the table's set. He ain't done with this year. He still thinks he's going to get in this year. I think there's too much to overcome. But next year, don't be surprised if you see Tennessee in the Elite Eight. Minimum. Coach, I got to think. And this year, what do you have to do moving forward? I guess my final question is, with Jerron Maimon out, you're missing a big. What does Tennessee have to do to get their way in the NCAA? Because you started out slow last year and still finished second in the SEC.
I think for us, we played you see four of our losses. You lost a tough one at home against Ole Miss. You lost at Ole Miss. You lost in against Kentucky, and he lost at Alabama. So he lost, you know, three road games against your top four or five teams in the league. So now it's a case for us getting at home against Alabama tomorrow, finding a way to win that game. You got Vanderbilt Tuesday at home. And then you try to get on the road, because I think we're right there, but it's just, you know, minimize on some of those mental mistakes and just continue to go from there and make progress.
That's right. You always got Money McCray. How about that?
He's doing a good job of scoring the ball. He really is. Joel McCray is doing a really good job accepting the challenge of being a leader and being a scorer.
Well, and that's a tribute to you, Coach, because when you came, Jordan had a long way to go, and now he's become a great player. And Earl, I'm really glad that Konzo came on today. Coach, thank you so much. And I know, like I said, I know Earl appreciates it. He got to see you play a lot more than I did, so it's kind of cool that you got to talk to somebody that was able to watch your career at Purdue and be a headache for
him. He had a good one.
Yeah. No, very good one. Thank you for having me on, Earl.
Hey, thank you, Coach. We'll try to have you on again sometime.
All right.
Thank you.
And that's Kwanza Martin talking about sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. The time, 23 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
You know that dogs were the first domesticated animals, but just how that happened is not quite known. I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday for this canine conundrum. Plus, Hurricane Sandy pummeled Northeast beaches. Should we rebuild them? How? By the way, we may not have enough sand to do that. Find out more on Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Science Friday on Talk of the Nation, coming up here on WKAR. Let's go back to the
phone. Good afternoon. I'm Scott Pohl, and here's a weather forecast. Today's high 22 degrees with an inch or two of snow expected. Cloudy tonight and a good chance of snow with a low of 11. A mix of sun and clouds tomorrow with a high of 25. On Sunday, the high 28 and mostly cloudy.
And let's talk with our good friend. We've got Jeremy Sampson on the line. So, Jeremy, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, good afternoon, Earl. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Well, we're doing good anyway. We've had a little SEC flavor. We just got off the phone with Konzo Martin, so you can direct us back in the Big Ten direction, I suppose.
Yeah, it was good to catch up with him. He's certainly had his work cut out for him there at Tennessee, but as you guys mentioned, he's really building himself a nice program down there.
Well, he is. He's a good coach. He does things the right way. And I joked with him, probably put him on the spot, made him squirm a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised at all if you saw Konzo Martin coaching in the Big Ten in the next 5 years.
He's certainly building a nice resume down there, and if you can win at Tennessee, you can pretty much do it anywhere.
Yeah. And that's the thing, Earl. When you look around the Big Ten, I mean, I don't know who's got any hot seats going right now, but Jeremy brings up a good point. Winning at Tennessee, it is a football school, and I don't want to say that these are all basketball schools up here, because I don't think that's the case. Maybe outside of Indiana, Purdue. But most Big Ten schools, from my observation, are very balanced. When we talk, is it a football or a basketball school? I think the Big Ten, Jeremy, probably does as good a job as any conference as far as balancing that.
Oh, there's no doubt. And that's one of Tom Izzo's favorite subjects when you talk to him, because a lot of people want to maybe assume Michigan State is a basketball school because of all the success that he's had in his tenure. But he's the first to tell you that, no. Michigan State is a football school first and foremost, and he's as big a football fan as anybody. But I think you're right, Mike. I think the balance in the league is what makes the Big Ten so strong. Certainly they're the best conference in America this year in basketball. Now, they took a little bit of a hit this past year in football, but I think a lot of that had to do with Ohio State and Penn State being on probation. Either one of those two schools is eligible for postseason play, and the stature of the Big Ten looks a lot better than it really did this year.
Yeah, so that helped it a lot, the stature of the Big Ten. People are crying or hoping that the Big Ten is going to be better. I assume they're going to be better next year. I mean, it's always been a good conference. Some years it's not better than others, but I'm assuming that it's going to be better next year than it was this year. The Big Ten is just a quality league.
Well, getting Ohio State off of probation next year and having them eligible, I mean, Urban Meyer still has them off the football game. So until he loses one, I think you have to look at Ohio State as having the potential to win the national championship next year. And, again, if you have a team in your conference that's challenging for the national championship, as Ohio State would have been this year had it not been for the probation, that obviously increases your stature nationally. And the Big Ten will get back to that next year.
I think so, Earl. I think Jeremy's right. I think now, Jeremy, I'm not sure if Ohio State wasn't on probation that they would have been able to have the same mindset to go undefeated, because then all of a sudden things change when you know you're playing for the crystal ball. So I don't want to be remiss and overlook that point. They knew they couldn't get. I covered an Auburn team in 1993 that was on probation that went 11-0, and there was no pressure. Because everybody knew that they couldn't win the title. And it's a different mindset than when all of a sudden you're on ESPN every week and you're being written up by Sports Illustrated and the media's on your campus and the coaches tighten up a little bit, the players tighten up a little bit. So I'm not so sure that Ohio State could have gone undefeated had they known what they were playing for. And quite frankly, I don't believe that Ohio State would have been better than Alabama. I would have been interested to see Ohio State against Notre Dame pre-Manti Te'o learning that his girlfriend wasn't real, because that guy that I saw in the national championship game and that I interviewed down there in Miami wasn't the same guy that I interviewed in South Bend the first week of December, Earl. And Jeremy, I don't know, did you think that maybe that affected Manti in his level of play? Because he just didn't look very right. I mean, he was missing tackles, wasn't he? I mean, geez.
Yeah, I mean, at face value, not knowing what was going on in the young man's head at the time, he had his worst game of the season. So I think you can, put two and two together that this was this situation, let's call it. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah, fair enough.
It's one of the strangest things I've ever seen in almost 20 years of doing this. That it had to have been weighing on his mind. And you're right, Mike. He played not like himself. And I think the big question now going forward, and I wish this story would start moving forward a little bit instead of trying to put itself in reverse all the time, is how does this really affect him now at the combine and the draft?
Yeah.
How do these NFL general managers, head coaches, when they sit down and talk to him, because we now know that he wasn't truthful fully with what the situation was. So how much of a character hit does he take in a lot of general managers and coaches' minds because of that fact? He's still as talented as any linebacker on the field in the college ranks this year, and I think he brings a lot of value at the next level. The question is, will teams want to take a chance on him because of that character?
You know, I think a lot of teams will want to take a chance on him. We know he's such a good player. Every time when you turn on ESPN, they're always showing highlights from Michigan and Michigan State. They show both those games. Have you noticed that? Every time you see a highlight, it's either the Michigan game or the Michigan State game. But he did such a great job in both those games that, you know, it was just hard. It was hard to ignore him. And they never did ignore those two games.
Well, you know, and I interviewed those guys at Notre Dame about the Michigan State game, Everett Golson and Manti Te'o, and the Notre Dame players, to a man, said that Michigan State was their first big test. That was a very special Saturday for them at Spartan Stadium. It was on the road. They were the underdogs. Michigan State, I believe, was ranked 10th or 11th, and I think Notre Dame was 20th. So they came in as underdog on the road. Zach Martin, one of their offensive linemen, when he was doing the interview with me, I don't think he realized I was from MLive. He said, I don't know if you've ever been in that stadium, but that's an extremely hostile environment. And we've got, of course, we have a story up on our MLive site about that in our archives if people want to check that out. But I thought it was interesting to hear the Notre Dame players talk about the importance of beating Michigan State. And Earl, what does it say about Michigan State now, where Notre Dame looks at that as a big game, where Michigan looks at that as a big game? And I think a part of what happened to the Spartans this year, they're coming off back-to-back 11-win seasons. They're top 15. They've served notice by beating Boise State. I think Michigan State got a little bit of that we're going to give you our best game syndrome.
Yeah,
and they
did.
Got everybody's best game, and except for the officials against Nebraska. I don't think they got the officials' best game against Nebraska, and that is to be settled next year in Lincoln, as we will see. But I thought the Spartans really were much better than a 6-6 team in the regular season, and the fact that they were able to beat a bowl team like TCU that was one of only three in the country to win six of its past seven bowl games. Gary Patterson is an outstanding coach. Amazingly enough, though, throughout that entire week, we heard Gary Patterson playing up to Mark D'Antonio. Not the other way around. You would have thought Mark would have been, TCU this and BCS team. But all Gary Patterson could talk about was Mark D'Antonio and what a fantastic coach he was. And then it played out in the game. We saw Coach D miraculously pull that game out with a backup quarterback. And I don't know, what was your reaction to that game, Jeremy?
Well, the second half was certainly a lot better than the first for Michigan State, and I think you have to give Mark D'Antonio and his coaching staff a lot of credit for that, because this was one of those games where you could go in at halftime, make some adjustments. You know, one of those was a change in quarterback and going with Connor Cook because he was the hot guy at the time, and, you know, Coach D pushed all the right buttons. It was, you know, as you mentioned, a disappointing season to say the least, but it kind of a strange one for Michigan State, because they very easily could have won 9-10 ball games. They just weren't able to close out some games. Now, they were able to – the thing that was strange for me is that there were games where they were able to make plays at the end, like the bowl game. But other games, you know, Michigan, Nebraska, where you're not able to make the plays down the stretch to win the game, and that's what was – I think maddening for the coaching staff is how come we can do it one week, but then we can't do it the next week. And it was just that lack of consistency late in the game that I think was really frustrating for the coaching staff. But when you look at the offensive execution, it wasn't what they hoped it could be, but the defense was so good. And in college football, when you have a defense as good as Michigan State's was this year, they're going to keep you in a lot of games when your offense is struggling. And I see that same thing for next year, depending on, you know, what happens at the running back position and at the quarterback position. The defense is going to keep Michigan State in a lot of games. If that offense can improve, especially in the red zone, could be another double-digit win season for the Spartans.
Yeah, I agree, Earl. I think this is a team next year. You know, when I look at the losses next year, projected losses, and of course this is all purely speculative, and we don't even know who's going to come out of spring drills as the starting quarterback or the starting running back, and there's obviously a hole to fill at tight end and defensive end with Deion Sims and Golson being gone into the NFL ranks early. But I see Michigan at home, and I guess I would call that a toss-up right now. I see at Notre Dame, and I would probably project that as a loss, because I was very impressed with Everett Golson. Very elusive guy, very, very tough to tame. And I've talked to Pat Narduzzi about it. Pat says they're going to be ready for him next year, but they still got to score points.
Yeah, they got to score points.
So I would put Notre Dame down as a loss. At Nebraska, I think that's a loss. Martinez is coming back, and I'm thinking, how many years of eligibility has this guy got? I mean, he went for over 200 yards in Spartan Stadium, and I know that the Michigan State linebacking core is going to be working on their speed, but he's not going to get any slower. And that's going to be a difficult challenge to go there into that sea of red where they've had sellouts going back to 1963. And then you've got, you're at Northwestern, which suddenly is a resurgent program, did an outstanding job winning their bowl game against Mississippi State. That's going to be a tough game. And Northwestern's always been kind of a pill for Michigan State.
They have been. They've been consistently, year in and year out, a very tough game for Michigan State.
So you got three losses. I think there was another game that could be a loss. It's slipping my mind. I think I put the Michigan game in the maybe. So three or four. But if you're looking at 8-4, 9-3 next year, that's a pretty good season. That probably gets you into the Outback Bowl. And another crack at another really good SEC team. But who knows? You know, a lot of people this year, Jeremy, I thought, now I want to get your take on this. A lot of people put a lot on Andrew Maxwell. And fair enough, there were some throws that Andrew made that he probably wishes he could have had back. But I thought the bigger problem was the receiving core. I didn't think the receivers had separation. I didn't think the routes were always run properly. There were critical and crucial drops that prevented the quarterback from getting into rhythm. There was some offensive line makeshift adjustments going on with injuries. I don't think Andrew Maxwell was as bad as maybe he was made to look by his receivers and linemen. I'd like to hear your take on that.
Well, I think it was actually more the offensive line and just the lack of consistency there, maybe even more than the receivers. I think both of those led into it. But having as many different combinations on the offensive line as they did early in the year, he just looked unsettled. You know, when he would get back in the pocket, he would have a little bit of those happy feet that's, you know, not advantageous for a quarterback to have. And it seemed like that just, even though the offensive line was able to stabilize itself with a group that started pretty much the whole second half of the year, he still didn't look comfortable in the pocket. And that just, to me, seemed to stem from early in the year and just not being able to get that confidence. But you're right, too, Mike. The receivers did not help things. A lot of drops early in the year. And it was a young receiving core.
Right.
You know, Michigan State went from having a very veteran group where the younger guys didn't get a lot of reps in 2011 to 2012 having to go with, you know, pretty much a whole new crop of receivers. So I think there was a lot of learning that had to take place with them. And I expect both groups to be a lot better next year. And that should help the quarterback, whomever that might be.
Okay. Well, we got to take a short break. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Because of my unfortunate situation with Avery, I'm alone. And I know, of course, that you're not seeing anyone. Therefore, I've decided that you and I should become friends with benefits.
No, thank you, please.
The final episode of 30 Rock airs next week. On the next Fresh Air, we feature interviews with Tina Fey, Alec Baldwin, and Tracy Morgan. Join us.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870.
We're expecting 1 to 2 inches of snow today with a high in the low 20s. It'll be cloudy tonight and there's a good chance of snow, the overnight low in the low teens. Saturday, we'll get to 25 for a high with a mix of sun and clouds. Sunday will be mostly cloudy with a high in the upper 20s. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-952-7870. Well, let's go to the phones. We've got our good friend Jerry from Hazlitt on the line. Jerry, how you doing?
Good afternoon, Earl. Jeremy, is Mike still there?
Yeah, Mike's still here.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Mike, I really enjoy your work. I you answered part of my reason for calling. I guess you're with M Live. Well, first of all, I had a question for both of you about Michigan State, but I just want to know what, if you could, Mike, briefly, to kind of let us know what you've been doing recently, and are you back in this area for good?
Yeah, I am. You know, I had an opportunity. You know, I decided that, I needed to broaden my horizons. I'd been doing the SEC for 20 years, and I'd pretty much done everything I could do, Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee, football, basketball, and then the Olympics. And a guy by the name of Bill Emko, who is the state news director for M Live, called me and told me that they had a position open covering Michigan State. And I never dreamed that there would be an opportunity to come back to mid-Michigan, you know, and work for such a powerful entity. I knew that the Detroit newspapers were very large. And, of course, I know Joe Rexroad. He's an outstanding journalist. And I don't see Joe going anywhere. So I'd kind of written that off. And, you know, he called me up, and I didn't even know really what MLive was. And, really, you know, it started in February, and we've got a state team that has two reporters on the Lions and the Tigers and the Red Wings and the Pistons and Michigan State. And Bill said, look, I want to give you this opportunity because, you know, you've done a lot of things in the South, and you're familiar with the important people up here. You know Earl Robinson. You know Jack Ebling. And you can make some inroads and maybe bring some of that SEC sports intensity back to mid-Michigan, because the Spartan Nation, you know, really doesn't seem to get that flair. And I can't point any fingers. I don't know necessarily the demographics or the charts or the potential advertisers. But I come back and I found a program here that I'm covering that's become dynamic since I was in school and graduated in 1992, since I grew up in Mason. So I got back here in October. I'm the primary football beat writer. And I back up Diamond Lung on the basketball beat. So I'm at all the home basketball games, and I'll travel to a few. I'll go to Indiana this week and Purdue next week. So I've kind of got my hand in football and basketball and kind of learning the ropes from Earl and Jack and getting to know the coaches and, you know, just kind of settling in. So it's been exciting. The Big Ten is exciting. Michigan State's got a lot going on. And, you know, the fan base, I guess, just needs to recognize – what a great job Mark D'Antonio's done. I know this wasn't the season they wanted. I know they were picked to finish higher. But you've got to take into account that they pretty much lost their entire passing game, and they had some really bad luck. You know, Earl and Jerry, one of the things that I noticed in Mark D'Antonio's two 11-win seasons, they were 9-1 in games decided by 10 points or less.
Yep.
This year they were 4-3 or 3-4. The scale's kind of balanced out.
Right.
So what does that tell you? It tells you that what Mark had did those 2 years, he had done an outstanding job. So don't penalize him now because things have kind of leveled off a little bit. Just trust that he's had the momentum to recruit some good guys off of those 11-win seasons. And you've got a schedule that sets up for this team to be contending for the Big Ten championship game next year. So I guess I've told you a little bit about me and a little bit about my thoughts on Michigan State. Would you agree, Jerry? I mean, you've seen this team for years.
Yeah, I do agree. And again, anybody can come back to this area and pump up some real life into, you know, the old hands like Jeremy and Jack and Earl. I'm 100% behind Mike. I'm going to tell you that right now because these guys need it. Okay, I'm not gonna you know.
Not going to bash us too much, right?
Well, not you guys, the Spartans. No, he's not saying you guys need it. He's saying the Spartans need it. Coach D'Antonio needs it.
I will say this briefly about that. I mean, the switch of the quarterbacks in the bowl game was telling, and something I really haven't seen at Michigan State, nor expected from this coaching staff, quite frankly. And Jeremy's mentioned this, they certainly knew what they were doing, and this is no particular reflection, I think, long-term on Maxwell, but clearly they were, you know, they just said, you know, we're just not satisfied going forward with the progress of things at that position. So I'm looking forward to it, whoever comes out on top. And I'll take this answer off the air, guys. Just your assessment of Michigan State's basketball team and their viability so far this year and maybe the game coming up on Sunday. I think they've done well, exceed expectations myself, but I think they've been fortunate in a few games, and I'm just wondering, given their short bench, if you know, and the current real stretch coming up, you know, how successful they can be, and I'd be interested to hear both your thoughts. And thanks for taking the call, Earl.
Okay, thank you.
Have a great weekend.
You too. And we've got another guest coming on with us. And Mike, you can ask him some tough questions. It's Dr. Novicki. He's involved with all of the research that's going on with the concussion syndrome. Oh, and so you should have some good questions for him. So let's talk to Dr. Novicki. Doc, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing excellent. Thank you for having me today. How are you doing?
Okay, glad to have you on, because as you know, especially after Junior Seau, once he passed away, so many people are shocked with the passing away of him and many other players. How do you see that? Do you see, is football a game where they need to change the helmets? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about changing helmets. Do you think that's something that needs to be done, or is that good enough?
I believe that the helmet companies are doing everything they can possibly to make the helmets as safe as they can. And one thing with the fans, and we tell a lot of our parents, what people have to realize is once you put a helmet on your head, that does not mean you're safe. And they will tell you adamantly, helmets do not prevent concussions. And what they are made for is to for two purposes, and that's to stop subdural hematomas, which are bleeding of the brain, and skull fractures. And they do that very well. So I don't think we need to change the helmets. I think what we need to do is look at Shockstrip, a device that I invented, and give it serious consideration on the helmets at the college and pro level. The youth level is already wearing it at this time. And I believe that's the direction they need to go in. Let's take what we have. Let's make it a little bit safer. It's similar to a bumper on a car on the outside of the helmet.
Yes, because that's the thing. I know we want to make the game safer and make it safer for all the players. But how do we make that work? I mean, so many guys get hurt playing this game, whether it's accidentally or intentionally. A lot of guys just get hurt playing football. How do you go about making it a safer game?
Well, we start with some equipment changes, like I said, about Shockstrip. And then I believe in the youth level, we have to start with our coaches and promote safer tackling. Our coach at our youth level promotes see what you hit, hit what you see. I think in the lower levels, I think we should eliminate the punt and the kickoff return. I say kick the ball, but where you get the ball is where you have the ball, and you start from there. So I think some of the changes that need to be made are pretty simple, actually, to make the game safer.
Doc, I guess I look at this and I say to myself, how come we haven't heard about this before? Was the game any safer in the 70s and 80s? Has this become a case of bigger, stronger, faster athletes kind of breaking through the threshold of the safe speed or the safe powers? Is that what's happening? Has the game become almost too dynamic for the game itself?
Well, I don't think the game's become too dynamic for itself, but I definitely agree with you that the players have become bigger, faster, stronger, quicker, and the evolution of the athlete has outpaced the evolution of man's ability to provide equipment that is going to make them 100% safe. There's always an inherent danger in any contact sport you play, even basketball. Mm-hmm. So I believe if we utilize devices such as mine that are out there to make the game safer with the changes in equipment and, like I said earlier, some coaching techniques, I think we have a very safe game.
And I'm thinking that, you know, based on how you've described your device, what it does is it probably scrubs off a little bit of the momentum. I know from when I covered NASCAR, and I'm sure you studied this at some point, Dale Earnhardt's death at Daytona. I was covering that race at Daytona that year, and it didn't look that bad on television to the uninformed or the uneducated like myself. We've seen cars flip and barrel roll, and we've seen dragsters at 300 miles an hour. But what people don't realize is when a car flips and ricochets and continues to move, it's scrubbing off the momentum, and the real danger is the blunt force and the sudden stop. So what I'm guessing your piece of equipment does is provides a little bit of a glance to maybe scrub off some of that force before the bluntness of the blow. Would that be a correct bad explanation?
No. That's a pretty good explanation. What my device does is it absorbs the primary impact, and as you said, it deflects off the secondary impact, and it reduces the probability of those impacts up to 41%.
And that's pretty significant when we're talking about a head injury. And now, you mentioned it's in youth leagues. Just how far-reaching is your device, and is it in front of any committees at the collegiate level, Division III, Division II, or any professional ranks anywhere in the world?
Well, right now we're on 28 teams. We're on players on 28 teams in 13 states, and our response has been phenomenal. And we have spoken to the collegiate and pro level, and what they're waiting for is they're basically sitting back and watching to see how well it does. We've only been, we're going into our third season, and as you know, this is a very sensitive issue. So everybody's going to be very cautious, especially when somebody comes out and says, hey, look, I have this device that does this. People want to see something mature. And as we've gone through the maturity process, we have seen that they are starting to look at us more. This past season, the National Federation of High School Athletic Associations legalized us. In fact, we were the first external helmet device to be legalized for use in sanctioned games, which that's when the collegiate level kind of started to look. And then as we spoke to some upper level executives, they also said the same thing. We think it's a great idea. We think it's great. We want to see it progress and mature through. And as it does, they're sitting back and watching and waiting. And I think they'll be very pleased with what they're going
to
see.
It sounds like we need to have this doctor
on. Yeah, we'll have you on next week
as it progresses. Yes. Because things are happening here. And I appreciate the interview because I learned a lot I didn't even know. And nice get for that one, Earl, because, boy, that's a subject that it's at the forefront of all of our minds right now.
Everybody's mind. So many kids playing football. We all have to be aware of the problems that exist in the game.
We do. And Doc, I really appreciate you joining us. I know we got a Bruce Pearl interview that Earl and I taped that we got to get to here in a minute. But please keep in touch with us and let us know what's going on, because I think there's a lot of people in our audience that want to know the latest on this. And isn't it great that we've got a professor from Michigan State behind this, a doctor that associated with our community that's behind this product that we desperately need, quite frankly.
Well, I thank you, and if people would like to find out more information about it, they can go on www.shockstrip.com. They can see all the testing results. They can read all about it. They can read the player testimonials and see everything about it, and they will know how to buy it and how to use it and how it goes on and how it's used. And I'd like to thank you guys for having me on. And anytime you need me back, I'm always willing to come back. And I would, everybody at Shockstrip made sure that I sent out a special thank you to Earl Robinson. I understand this is one of his last interviews and he's retiring. So, Mr. Robinson, have a great retirement.
Thank you, sir.
You've had a great career. So,
thank you
very much for having me on. I'm very honored.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for being with us. Yeah, bye bye. And now we've got one more interview today, and I'll be back Monday. I made a mistake. I thought today was my last day, but it's not till Monday. So let's bring in Bruce Pearl right now. Hey, Bruce, I just want to know, give us a funny story about Mike. I've known Mike. I was probably one of the first persons he knew when he got into business. So give us a funny story about Mike.
Well, you know what? I kind of was an all-access coach, and I provided Mike with all access, you know. And we rode a lot of buses through Europe together. I wanted him inside my program because I wanted things to be accurately described. And all I can tell you is Mike's got a great heart. He's got great passion. He's become a pretty good basketball writer. He was actually a better football guy when I first met him. But Earl, as far as the funny stories are concerned, you know, what happens in Knox Vegas stays in Knox Vegas.
That's a good one.
Well, I'll tell you what, Earl. I'll give you a good story about Bruce Pearl. And he really wasn't able to elaborate this until just a few years ago. You know, when you go on those European trips, you never really know what you're going to get. At least that's what I learned. Sometimes Bruce's team would show up, and there'd be a team that they would clearly overwhelm. And well, one time they walked into a gym, and it was a setup. There was some guys on that team, and I don't know what country they came from, but they didn't look like they were all local. And there was an intentional foul called on Chris Lofton with about a minute left when Tennessee was down 1 point, and he was going for a steal. There would be no reason to do this.
Yeah.
And after the game, Coach Pearl said, I can't believe this has happened. And I talked to him after. I said, well, what do you think? Have you ever seen anything like this anywhere else where you go into a gym and you can't get a call like that? And, Coach, do you remember what you told me?
I'm imagining what gym you said that was. No, what was it?
Coach said, yeah, every time we go into Rupp Arena, Kentucky.
Yeah,
but, of course, Kentucky was winning 52 games in a row, Earl. But I'll tell you, one thing I learned from Coach Pearl was how he managed his players. And I see a lot of the same things in Coach Izzo. And Coach Pearl was very honest about his players' skills. He never threw them under the bus, but like Coach Izzo, he would assess them accurately. So we always knew if a guy needed to work on his shot, Coach Pearl would say, hey, well, he just needs to get in the gym. And I've heard Coach Izzo say that about Gary Harrison.
Yep.
Coach Pearl, you've had a chance to see a little bit of Michigan State, and they're on a little bit of a run now. They've won 5 in a row. What do you think about the Spartans? They're getting ready to go to Indiana on Sunday. I guess that'll be another road test. But where do you kind of see them in the Big Ten right now?
Well, you know, we're going to learn a lot more about this Michigan State club here in the next coming weeks. Tom Izzo, you know, look, when you play defense and you rebound, you're going to be in a lot of basketball games. And that's what Michigan State does. And that's what they've always done. Tom Izzo, he likes this basketball team. And he's liked this team all year long. He thinks they've worked pretty hard, and he thinks they've got a chance to be pretty good. And, the thing about the Spartans is they've been consistent. And when you defend and rebound, you know, you're going to be consistent. Indiana's going to be a tall task. Indiana has improved tremendously on the defensive end, and that's where I think it's going to be a much more physical Indiana team than what Michigan State saw last time.
Yeah. Now, would you say that Michigan State is not, even if they're not the premier team, are they one of the four or five best teams in the Big Ten?
Yeah, Earl, they are. They are definitely one of the four or five best teams in the Big Ten. There's no question about it. You know, they've got good depth. They've got good size. I think Keith Appling is a real key to this basketball team. His ability to continue to make other guys better, both offensively and defensively, continue to be more vocal as a leader, you know, leading by example, but also continue to be a better teammate. Because I think in some ways Michigan State's going to go as he goes, but they are clearly one of the top four or five teams in the league.
Coach, I know you've got to do another interview here, so let me get one more question in. When you look across the country and you break down the nation, right now the Big Ten's playing pretty good. It doesn't seem like anybody can hang on to number one. As you look forward, who are the teams that we should look for to make that Final Four run across the country?
Mike, there are no great teams this year. There are a lot of good teams, and I think that makes it what to watch for. It makes it really, really exciting. Hey, if I'm in a locker room right now this year, I'd say to the guys, okay, fellas, tell me who's in the Final Four. You go ahead and write them down on a piece of paper. Dozen different teams. And so, you know what? If Michigan State could be without us, why not? Why can't we be one of those teams? Because nobody is that much better than anybody. A lot of guys have gone to the NBA. There is a lot more parity. I think this is the year of the Cajun veteran. We're not talking about one and done this year like we were last year over the last several years. And so, you know, as I look at the landscape right now, Mike, you know, Louisville, Syracuse, Indiana, Michigan, Kansas, Florida. I would say those would be the six teams that I feel the most comfortable being in the league.
That makes a big difference to those teams that have a chance. When you look at the overall picture, as you said, they all look good. A lot of them look good. But does anyone have a particular player that's the outstanding player for their league?
You know, Earl, I think Trey Burke at Michigan is got to be a guy that you look at as a player of the year, the John Wooden player of the year. I think that he is so important to Michigan as far as their transition game, their ability to score in the half court, what they do off the ball screen. You know, they get 90% of their offense in the half court is on ball screen, and he's...
Hey, we want to thank Bruce Pearl for joining us and appreciate that. We've got to go now. We're just about almost out of time. About 1 minute left. So we'll be talking a little bit more with you. It's always a pleasure talking with you. Come back and join me on Monday. Monday will definitely be the final day. So I messed that up this time. I'm sorry for that. But Monday will be the final day, and we'll be here to talk sports with you on Monday afternoon. I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you all for calling. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870. If you've never called us before, we ask you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. call us up to talk sports with us right here on AM 870. So we want to thank you once again for joining us, and we'll see you again on Monday on AM 870 WKAR.
From NPR in New York.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.